This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Lawmakers and union leaders are raising concerns about practices at the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration, or MSHA, amid an increase in coal fatalities. As Becca Schimmel reports, officials are asking questions about MSHA's compliance assistance program.
West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin told MSHA he's heard, quote, alarming reports about how the agency is implementing its new compliance assistance program. In a September 7th letter, Manchin wrote that he's heard of miners being denied the ability to assign a representative to accompany MSHA inspectors and that those inspectors have been instructed to leave their credentials behind before inspecting a mine. United Mine Workers Communications Director Phil Smith says without their credentials, MSHA inspectors essentially become tourists in the mine.
It means that they can't enforce the law, and it means that they are at a disadvantage when it comes to pointing out serious and significant issues in the mines, and we think that's a real problem.
MSHA started the Compliance Assistance Program in June to address the increase in mining injuries and fatalities, particularly among young miners. 12 coal miners have already been killed on the job this year, 8 of them in West Virginia and Kentucky. Senator Manchin is asking for details on how the program is being implemented. His office did not return requests for comment. Celeste Monfortin is a former MSHA official and occupational health researcher at George Washington University and Texas State University. She says Manchin's letter echoes similar concerns the UMWA raised in July.
Seems like in that time period when the UMWA raised this as a concern that their questions would have been answered by now, you know, like what's taking so long to like get to the bottom of it.
MSHA declined an interview request, but a spokesperson issued a brief written statement saying the assistance program, quote, does not compromise MSHA's ability to conduct mandated inspections, end quote. However, MSHA says personnel who conduct compliance assistance visits are not considered authorized representatives or inspectors. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. If you just look at the data, West Virginia has enough pediatricians to cover the number of children here. What there aren't enough of is many specialists, such as pediatric allergists, neurologists, and rheumatologists. As Kara Lofton reports, that's forcing many families to seek care out of the state.
Lori Laxton met me at McDonald's in Beckley. When her daughter was 4, she began having trouble with her kidneys. The closest pediatric urologist was at the University of Virginia Medical Center, 3.5 to 4 hours away from her home in Pineville. A few years later, her son was diagnosed with general epilepsy. The closest neurologist was in Charleston, almost 2 hours away. Although closer, that experience didn't go well.
He pretty much looked at us and said, "Your son will have seizures. Get over it and go on."
Laxton didn't accept that diagnosis and ended up driving farther for a second opinion. That experience went better, so she continued making the 3 to 4 hour trip with her son. A pediatric cardiologist based in Morgantown, Larry Rhodes, says pediatric and adult subspecialties are totally different ballgames.
Well, because there's really a lot of difference between, let me just use Pete's cardiology as an example. What we take care of as pediatric cardiologists is not the same thing that adult cardiologists take care of. The only thing we really share is the word cardiologist. We're actually two completely different specialties.
In 2014, Rhodes set up a specialty pediatric clinic in Summersville. 12 days a month, about 10 different pediatric specialists now come to the central part of the state to see patients. He also helped facilitate the development of 8 pediatric cardiology clinics across the state.
My ultimate goal would be that no child would leave West Virginia for care, you know, but there are some specialties that we don't have. And sometimes the wait time to get into to see a specialist in these specialties that only have 1 or 2 providers is prohibitive.
Sending specialists out to communities helps bridge the gap. But Rhodes points out, travel eats into how much time physicians have to actually see patients. So efforts to expand in-state access to specialists includes improving access to telemedicine services. Those efforts are hindered by a lack of reliable statewide broadband.
So we kind of put it together with duct tape. I mean, we do the best we can, and we get someplace where we can do telemedicine, and then we have the patients you know, they may have to come some distance to get there.
But ultimately, if we can improve broadband access, that could help solve the problem, he says, giving patients better access and more choice. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support from the Benedim Foundation, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Cloudy skies today, rain likely with highs in the 60s and low 70s. Scattered rain tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Award-winning documentary filmmaker Ken Burns has turned his talents to the Vietnam War. His latest film series is coming out soon. We have our own talented documentary team here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting who have also produced a film about the Vietnam War. Their project profiles West Virginia's involvement in the controversial conflict through the eyes of five Mountain State residents. News director Jesse Wright sat down with executive producer Suzanne Higgins to talk about Vietnam, West Virginians Remember.
Suzanne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So you and I have talked about doing something around West Virginians in the Vietnam War for a while, even before the Ken Burns documentary was announced. What got you interested in the topic to begin with?
Well, you know, I was born during the Vietnam War, and while I was very, very young, like in kindergarten at the end, it was still, you know, something that was in my house on the 6 o'clock news. I knew of the war, and I remember my parents with very, very different opinions. My mother, devout Catholic and Hispanic, and my father, who had served, was a surgeon in World War II and the Korean War. He had a 10-year Army career. And so I remember my parents, when I was very young, arguing, and my mother saying, you know, she would take my older brothers, if this thing continued to last, she would take them out of the house. She would go to Mexico with my brothers. She was what I guess you would call a conscientious objector. And my father, feeling quite the opposite. It is your duty. If you are called, you serve. And it's interesting because, you know, that played out in families across the country during that time. So, you know, I went to high school. There was very little about the Vietnam War, and it's just always been a personal interest of mine, because from very, very early years, I remember that was a very frightening thing. It was potentially going to split up my family. Yeah, so I've had an interest for a long time.
I see. One of the things that really stood out to me in West Virginia Public Broadcasting's production was the discussion about the way in which rural servicemen and women were used during the war. Let's listen to one of your sources in the film, historian John Hennen.
Why was the per capita death rate for West Virginia soldiers so high? My speculation would be because so many of them were put into the most critically dangerous situations, such as they called it, walking point.
So as you were putting the film together, did anything stand out to you about how this group of West Virginians served during the war?
Well, I think what stood out about this particular group, the gentleman I sat down with to talk to, is just how young they were, 17, 18, 19-year-olds. And we know that the average age of the Vietnam veteran, the Vietnam serviceman, was 19, incredibly young. These guys were still in high school when they decided to enlist, or they were just getting out of high school when they got the letter from the draft board. And so, yeah, I guess that was just the most, such an eye-opener for me when I was talking to these men that are now, you know, between 65 and 70. And again, it comes, you know, I see everything through the lens of a mom. I have a 17-year-old son. And so it just, you know, you start to put yourself in the place of these families and these servicemen. Yeah, that really struck me from the very beginning.
So scores of West Virginians served during the Vietnam War. How did you choose the five who were included in this documentary?
Well, you know, you start with research, and I started reaching out to different veterans groups, the Vietnam Veterans of America, other contacts that I've had because I've been, you know, I've been covering news, public affairs, and producing documentaries. I've got a wealth of contacts. And also, I work with other senior producers who have contacts in other regions of the state. And so, ultimately, the five gentlemen that we are featuring, that came from recommendations from our Morgantown senior producer, our Huntington senior producer. I found a couple gentlemen on my own through my own research, and then through the direction of Vietnam Veterans of America. What was fascinating, Jesse, is that, you know, I started by simply making calls, and I asked them, would they be willing to talk to me about growing up in West Virginia, and then memories of the circumstances in which they joined the military during the Vietnam War, and what they were willing to talk to us about during their experiences in Vietnam. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly, how that experience impacted the rest of their lives. And so these, you know, these five gentlemen, I had to go through at least a dozen before I got to five that were willing. And it's because not everyone is able to talk about that time.
So let's hear now from Dave Evans. He's one of the veterans who you profiled in the film.
We became doctors, we became lawyers, we became, you know, a lot. We went to work in a lot of different professions, but we never left that behind us. I mean, we couldn't leave that behind us because, you know, when you send an 18-year-old kid to war and they cross that bridge from peacetime into wartime, there's no way they ever come back. There's no way. That bridge is burnt. That bridge is burnt behind them.
Obviously, the war is very much still with Dave. From working on the film, what's your takeaway of the Vietnam War's legacy on this group of five men?
I think one of the takeaways is that, you know, there are physical scars of war and there are emotional scars of war. And all told, I spoke and had really deep conversation with a couple dozen of Vietnam veterans for the making of this program, I would say. And most of them told me that they live today with various degrees of PTSD. And we know that PTSD was not recognized as a real condition that needed specialized treatment until the early 1980s. And so for a generation of servicemen, we weren't ready, up and ready, to address the PTSD when they returned home. And when this generation returned home, it was doubly painful for them because of public opinion about that war. It was the most divisive, and so they carry that with them. They carried that with them when they returned. They experienced that, and only augmenting the PTSD. And so the takeaway is that these gentlemen discussed with me that they live with it, they cope with it, that they've reached out and gotten treatment for it, and they want to send that message to fellow Vietnam veterans and veterans of subsequent wars that there is help out there, and they encourage them to pursue that.
Suzanne Higgins, congratulations on an amazing production, something that I think will stay with our audience for quite some time. And thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Jesse.
That was Jesse Wright speaking with executive producer Suzanne Higgins about her new documentary film called Vietnam, West Virginians Remember. You can watch it tonight at 8 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You can also go to wvpublic.org to find out about the free public screenings of the film in a community near you. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org.